Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you my Venusian Odyssey. This program is dedicated to the memory of Timothy Green Beckley, Ruth and Ernest Norman, and Joseph Alex Martin. And now we will turn to the first item on our agenda, which is The Voice of Venus, a Unarius tome of great import, a foundational volume. And we have with us David Reynolds from Unarius, who's going to help me gain greater insights into this book. Greetings and welcome, David. How are you?
Doing well, Hercules. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's always great to be speaking with you and my fellow brothers and sisters at Unarius.
How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm looking forward to discussing The Voice of Venus with you. Some of these questions I know the answer to. However, our audience might not be familiar with The Voice of Venus. I'll share a story. Back in the mid-1970s, I was a deep trance channel for a theosophical spiritualist type of group. And underneath the altar of my teacher, she had several volumes that were hidden. And one of the volumes was The Voice of Venus. So I wasn't allowed to read it. But, of course, I saw the title. So I went to the nearest metaphysical store and bought it. And I read it. And that was my first introduction to Unarius. And that's been about half a century ago. And I'm still in contact with Unarius and still learn a lot from Unarius.
Yes, I had an experience, but maybe I'll touch on it toward the end. But, you're exploring the celestial worlds of Unarius, or it was called Shambhala in the past.
Yes. And now I've returned to that, and I've dedicated the coming year. I started at the end of August, and I'll wrap up by next September, revisiting all of the celestial worlds of Unarius, starting with The Voice of Venus, which, again, opened the doors to Unarius for me. Now, is Venus the planet Venus?
Yes, for the most part. The physical part that we see is just the lower frequency part of it. The true life there is on a higher spiritual vibration, so therefore it doesn't respond to any of our instruments or photography or anything like that. So the Nazarenes started at 2,000 years ago when he announced, in my father's house there are many mansions, meaning worlds and planets and universes and worlds within worlds. So, yes, there is a higher part to Venus that is completely out of our realm of physical senses, but some of it is still in our frequency realm. In other words, the planet Venus is evolving to a higher state of being or evolution, so that they're kind of halfway between the third dimension and the fourth dimension. There are plenty of planets and celestial bodies, galaxies, that have evolved completely out of the third dimension. They're now in the fourth or fifth or sixth or higher dimensions. Unless they destroy themselves, they evolve into higher worlds.
Well, let's hope we're on a more positive and productive and progressive path than that. Although sometimes listening to the news, it certainly seems like we're on the highway to destruction.
Well, that's why you have to practice. We're in the world, but not of it. Planet Earth is in need of many light bearers. So Dr. Norman started describing the higher worlds, higher planes of understanding with the Pulse of Creation. The first volume, as you mentioned, is The Voice of Venus. And the main city is called Azur. And their leader is named Nalvar. So if you read the Voice of Venus, they will describe that they had to put the cloud cover there. So a lot of their chemical makeup or periodical tables are more complex than our 101, 101 elements we have here. So the cloud cover consists not of water vapor, but of high frequency components or elements that we don't have on our world. So the cloud cover was put there by the Venusians to avoid our astronomers from being completely confused, because I'm sure parts of Venus are translucent. You can see right through it. And there's no way a physical human being can go into the surface there and land on anything, because that is in a higher frequency realm, and they wouldn't understand unless they read the Pulse of Creation or the Voice of Venus. Then they may have a different understanding. But mainly people go there in their sleep state, in other words, psychically. So a lot of people take psychic trips there or astral travel to Venus, and they bring back really interesting memories, visitations.
When I recently visited the Venus in my astral travels while reading the Voice of Venus, initially the people looked very much like people on Earth, especially classical Greek people, which I guess makes sense because I'm so attuned to the Grecian elements of culture and culture bearing. But as my experience progressed, it became more and more beings of light. And although generally humanoid, they certainly weren't human by the time my experiences there finished. And they had explained, as they do in the book, that basically a lot of what I see is what I expect to see, and that they're willing to work with what we expect to communicate with us, but it's not the real reality of the planet or its people.
There is a very interesting quote I want to read to you at the very beginning, chapter one. It says, if we look at the beam of a searchlight, we will see that the point of emergence from the lens, as it progresses further and further away from its source, it loses its brilliance and intensity. So likewise does the mind function. So the further the mind functions away from the lighted realms of spirituality, the more dull their mentality is. The closer the mind functions from these higher worlds of light, the more illumined their minds function, the more creative they can be in tune with the higher realms and bring through great works of poetry or artwork or whatever.
And Venus is especially, or it seems especially, devoted to healing, even healing of extreme types, like people who had decided to terminate their existence for one reason or another.
Yes, Venus serves as the mother, father, hospital, doctor, nurse planet for our solar system. And a lot of people don't realize that when they suffer a psychic shock or when they end their own life, they're using their life force against themselves. They don't know what they're doing. They don't understand it. So quite often they're taken to Venus, the healing wards, and on the ceilings of some of these healing temples are these crystal lenses. And the higher minds focus their mind energies through the lenses, and they're focused down on the psychic beds of these patients until one day they have enough vital life force that we can reincarnate again. And it's not easy to overcome that. But yes, it's a hospital planet in a lot of ways.
But they don't only treat that. They treat a wide variety of ailments. That might be what they focus on in Azure. But it seems from what they shared, both in meditations and in the book, is that they treat a wide variety of human ailments, and not just the desire to terminate your existence.
Correct. Yeah, there's a lot of psychological treatment, psychiatric help given on Venus, especially this world needs it, because our psychology is only developed in the physical way, where we think the mind is the brain. Well, of course, the mind is much further than that, is much more extended than just the brain cells. So they do help in psychology and all kinds of things that our people need here.
One of the things that I found very fascinating about the book is that they showed the somebody transitioning into Venusian existence, and then somebody transcending Venusian existence and ascending to a higher plane. That was both familiar and very alien to our experience here on Earth.
Well, here on Earth, a new birth is through the womb, but on there, they have kind of a, like a flame energy where the new soul, if they're ready to incarnate on Venus in their soul evolution, they're ready for that step, then they will incarnate, they will sort of materialize into a flame, and they will be cared for by, you know, the parents, the Venusians, who will care for them. And then but unless you have approached a spiritual mastership, you wouldn't be compatible with it, you know, to incarnate there. But it's a fantastic planet. It has all the different scientific, all the other rays of the other seven rays of the Shambhalas there too. So, but the main thing is the healing and the correction. So a lot of people need a lot of psychotherapy in their sojourn here on Earth because they run across very difficult things to overcome and to get through. Without the past life information, it's very difficult. So we have to have a lot of help from the Venusians.
Now, I'm currently on Muse. And in Muse 2, the focus is very heavily on our psychological health and ways in which we can improve it. So that seems to be a concern on all the different planes of Shambhala, how we're doing damage to ourselves because of the way we've structured our society and the way we treat each other.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when a person enters into creativity like painting or artwork, and they know about these higher planes, quite often they make a direct connection through their higher self, their alignment to the beings who exist on Muse. And believe me, painting and artwork can be a wonderful therapeutic practice. I mean, it can completely revamp your whole existence. So painting and creativity on Muse is extremely important for people to learn the value of it.
Yes, it is. It's very important. Unarius has always helped people cultivate their creativity and has encouraged them to be creative. Here on our Olympian channel, we have a show by Nick Curto that focuses on creativity. And then we have a lot of creative people, authors, artists, and so forth that frequently share their journeys on our other shows. So, you know, that is phenomenally important. I've always believed that creativity is our most divine aspect, because we can take something that is in our brains and use our creativity to bring it forth and to anchor it into our reality. So that if that's not divine, I don't know what is.
And then add a spiritual reality to it too.
Yes. Now, you mentioned other planes of Shambhala. What are the other planes of Shambhala?
Well, there's the plane of Hermes, which is devoted to philosophy. Darwin gives an excellent chapter in there, by the way. They only introduced the concept of evolution, but he goes on to explain what he left out when he was incarnated here. So there's a plane devoted to teaching, the plane of Orion, the plane of science, which is the plane of Eros, or I guess love in action.
Mm-hmm.
There's the plane of leadership, which is Unarius. There's a plane of devotion where you are devoted to an ideal or maybe God or a higher understanding of life. So there is a part of you that's devoted. So there's a whole plane devoted to devotion. And I know Yogananda was part of that plane, wasn't he?
Yes, definitely. Many people that are quote-unquote religious or quote-unquote spiritual are tied to the plane of Elysium. And the ancient Greeks knew a lot about Elysium. They wrote about it a great deal.
So Elysium is the plane of devotion. So, yeah, Jesus had passed through all the seven planes of the Anarius or Shambhala before he incarnated here. So he had all of the seven vibrations or rays of understanding. So, and if this is not isolated just to him, I mean, many, many souls will go through all the seven planes as become spiritual teachers to make sure that we have a joining of science and spirit. That's part of our new age, as part of the Aquarian age that's now starting to come about in a more direct way. And the future of planet Earth is positive because we are under their direct tutelage and guidance. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have a negative to deal with, but the saving us from the negative part of it is by understanding knowledge and applying it to our everyday life, which means the psychology of consciousness. When you understand that your consciousness, your being, is linked to other planes, that you're not a separate little entity, you can be in tune with a multitude of planes, or as Jesus said, seek first this connection with your infinite cosmic self, the Father within, and then all things will be added to you, which means try to be in tune with your higher self is the first thing, and then you will be guided, and you'll be protected, and you'll be led. And it's sure true. I can testify and so the other Unarians that it's incredible to be guided and protected by this great, great Unarius brotherhood and sisterhood.
Very true. And the Unarius brothers and sisters, they seem very attuned to crystals because they created the Crystal Mountain Cities, and throughout the Pulse of Creation series, there are references to the Crystal Cities and Crystal Mountain Cities.
Yes, many of the crystal formations they use to focus the mind energies, the healing energies, are grown or maintained with their mind energies. So just about everything on Venus is a mental achievement. So they grow and they maintain everything with their mind energies. And when they get ready to graduate from Venus, they will enter into this flame, as you mentioned earlier. And it's like walking up the steps, so to speak. And they enter into another flame of ascension, and then they'll be able to materialize into another higher plane, whatever their evolution is ready for.
Now, Unarius shares something very interesting in the Pulse of Creation and in other texts, in that part of us lives the life and remains who we were in that life. And then another part of us could incarnate. And the example that comes to mind is Lincoln and Kennedy.
Lincoln and Kennedy, yes. So when John F. Kennedy was here as president, he was also reliving the part of his Abraham Lincoln past life. And I guess he was able to tune into the positive part of it, being a great leader and people trusted him. But the negative part there, the psychic shock, the assassination was also there too. So, yes, we carry both a positive and a negative when we incarnate. But
and we can
being a Unarian, you learn how to deal properly with a negative.
Yes. Unarians, I've said it before and I'll say it again, are the only people I know who consistently take responsibility for their world. A lot of people try to avoid responsibility and seek to blame others. But Unarians know that we create the world on some level and they take responsibility for it.
Absolutely. Just like the Venusians, they know they created their own world. They just do it with different energies. So in the same way, we Earthians have created this world, and we don't really understand it, but we have created it with our misunderstanding of principle, of how to treat each other. And there is a swing back now to spiritual understanding. So in our future, you'll have we'll have planetary leaders who are more versed into the spiritual nature of things. That's our future.
And that sounds like a wonderful future.
May I describe
your experience? Yes, please. I was going to tell you we have.
No, I was just going to describe a little bit of the landscape of Venus. So in the landscape, one will notice iridescent glowing beauty, and the vegetation is a riot of beautiful colors. The seas and the waters are radiant opalescent beauty. The mountains composed of the essence of mother of pearl. The atmosphere, you will find many multiple hanging rainbow-hued auras. Dewdrops shoot forth radiant shafts of light. Countless strange and fantastically hued birds and huge butterflies fly everywhere. Cities appear sort of hanging half suspended between earth and sky. So that's a little bit of the surface or the life on Venus. So if I may, I want to describe this experience that I had.
Yes, I love that.
So I was in North Carolina, and I had found Unarius, and I had known that I wanted to make my life associated with Unarius, but I was trying to find a polarity of the opposite sex. So I was sort of engaged to this lady who really, I didn't feel like she was ready. But one of the things we like to do is go canoeing on a lake. And anybody from Charlotte would know it's Lake Wylie. So we would used to go in a canoe, and we would go on romantic little trips canoeing all over the lake. And so I was struggling whether to take her to California with me, and I just didn't feel like she was ready for past life therapy or anything like this. So I had a dream. It was more than a dream.
Wow.
I was taken psychically to Venus. And basically, I think they were trying to tell me that if I stayed there to marry her, I would repeat a previous life. So in the dream, they showed me how we drowned together in a body of water. It looked like a lake. But when we drowned, we went down to the depths, hugging each other, embracing each other, and that's how we passed over to spirit in that life. So when I got over to Venus, I was in this like greeting area room, like a waiting station, a waiting area in a bus station or something like that. And I looked around me, and I saw all of these souls who were like sad and depressed. They had a dark aura. And it was told to me mentally that these people had just passed over, and they didn't really understand death and the continuity of life, or the continuity of consciousness. So the Venusians appeared to me just like in the voice of Venus, as lighted beings with these iridescent robes. And they, so I was the one, I was left to the very last. And then one of the Venusians came up to me. Oh, by the way, my fiance was sitting right beside me, and I told her, I said, I cannot wait to find out what my next step is in my progressive evolution. And she was crying, crying. And she said, I wanted my mother. I want my mother. Meaning she was earthbound. She wasn't ready to study Unarius. So I went with this Venusian who took me into another room, and he showed me this psychic anatomy viewer where you stand in front of it. It's like a fluorescent kind of a screen. And he said, go ahead, stand in front of it. And it shows your past life. And I stood in front of it, and then I woke up.
Wow. Wow.
And
thank you for sharing
that. So
that
told me right there, that told me right then and there that the Venusians answered my question for me, and that it was to bring this lady with me would do her more harm because she wasn't ready for this understanding. And so she was a Catholic. That's the way she was brought up, and that's the way, you know, I had to leave her that way. So I wasn't allowed to interfere in her evolution.
Wow, that is quite a tale, very illustrative of the Venusians and their role in our evolution. Thank you for sharing that. That was a very private thing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And alas, our conversation nears its end. We have like 4 more minutes, and I would love for people to be able to find Unarius because there are many wonderful things in Unarius that are a benefit to all. How can people look into Unarius on their own?
Well, you can check out our website, unarius.org, unarius.org, and you can contact us and email us. And we have an event coming up in October, the second weekend in October. We celebrate a future event, the future spaceship landing, where we are joining a greater family of planets, like a UN, United Nations, Interplanetary Confederation. So we celebrate that every year. So coming up October 14th and 15th, 2023, we have a wonderful celebration. And so that's one way. You can call us on a phone number, 800-475-7062, and leave a message if you'd like. And we would love to share the teachings with you. And the Pulse of Creation is amazing. When I first started studying them, I couldn't put them down. I would just come home from work, and I would just couldn't wait to read the next chapter and the next chapter. And quite often, I would have a question about all of these things about spirituality, and the very next chapter would answer the question. So it's amazing.
Yes, it is. And the books can be experienced on a wide variety of levels. They're not just something you read. You can actually enter the book by reading it. And that'll be the topic for another day. But that claim has been made by Unarius, and I can vouch for the fact that it's true.
And quite often, many people who study The Voice of Venus and other Pulse of Creation books, they have experiences on their own where in a sleep state, they they have a psychic experience. By the way, if you are a nurse or a doctor or a therapist working in the field of healing, in the sleep state, whether you're aware of it or not, you go to the plane of Venus for further help and instruction.
And that will be a conversation for another day as well. David, I want to thank you. You're awesome, and thank you for sharing all the information and a very private and profound vision. I look forward to our next conversation. Please give my regards to everybody at El Cajon.
Thank you, Hercules. Thank you.
Okay, I will talk to you very soon.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye, and thank you. And now we move to the second half of our show, where we are going to be with Setna Comwest, also known as Michael K. Waterman. And this portion of the show is dedicated to the memory of Joseph Alex Martin. Greetings and welcome, Setna. How are you?
I'm well. I'm blessing. I'm well.
I'm glad to hear that. You are one of the most profound people that I know on a variety of levels, and you are very dedicated to your gods and goddesses, and I'm looking forward to gaining a Venusian perspective of ancient Kemet from you tonight, and you're going to do this by speaking of Hathor, I understand.
I will say from the realm of Hathor, Heteru, which is the house of Horus. October, Osiris brings his reign to the close and goes into the netherworld, the future world. Horus is now in control for the rest of the year until spring, when then he brings it forward again and Osiris is again in rule. Hathor is Venus to you Greeks, or Aphrodite to you Greeks.
Yes.
And her realm is bright pinks and reds and gold. She is the arbiter of the knowledge of relationships, of that which brings about love, as is Aphrodite and Venus, which I believe are the same goddess.
Me too.
Hathor. I've always thought so. I thought the Romans looked and said, oh, I like that goddess, but I want a different name. And you Greeks went, okay, as long as you worship her.
There you go.
But Hathor predates both of them. She is the daughter of the sun. She is an odd creature. Some say that she came from she walked literally out of the sun onto the planet. But she stopped first and kneeled on her own planet, which is Venus, which is a land of knowledge. Also staying there is the god Tehute, who you also call Thoth, who is the Egyptian god, the ibis or baboon god, Thoth. There's another energy of him, which is shown as an older man wearing a gold cap on the back of his head, like an oversized yarmulke, I guess you'd say. He is the god of wisdom, and his wife, Shasta, or Shaset, is numbers. And they also have a third brother, whose name is Ptah. But why I mentioned all of them is because they are part of the court of Hathor. She sits on her throne as Isis has stepped aside, because she is now the queen mother, I guess the dowager queen, the dowager empress. And Horus and Hathor reign on the physical plane. Hathor can go into the other planes, but she is concerned with the making sure that we have, how will I say it, reproduction on this planet and in the universe. She makes sure that life regenerates itself over and over and over again. This is something people don't talk about. They don't mention it. They only say, oh, she's the goddess of love and beauty. That's all very well and good. Her life is much more complex than this, as is Venus and Aphrodite. But I find that Hathor is more beneficent. I don't see her turning young girls into other characters, as in other cultures who will remain younger for the moment. She
now,
is...
Is she tied to the planet Venus as well, or is Venus...
It is her planet. It is where she's from. She emanates from... That's what I was saying. She emanates from Venus. And her vibration is Venusian, very much so. You know, she will come from that planet to where she's needed. We are very selfish beings, we earthlings, so we call for her constantly. We want love. We need it desperately. And right now, this world has been so chaotic. In the birth of Aquarius, we started in war and chaos, don't you think, Hercules?
I would say so, yes.
The World Trade Center was exploded. There have been wars and pestilences and chaos and riots and mass murders. This is how Aquarius is born, in flame and fire and confusion. And now she raises her hand and says, stop. Now it's time for wisdom and peace and love and harmony and understanding, as the old song used to say, bringing the wisdom and the knowledge back. As your former guest was saying, we need to be able to create and reach that plane. I do this with chanting and incense and astral projection. I have been a rather strong and rather tested astral projector since I was a very small boy. I think I told you, but I'll tell you again because it's funny, how I came across astral projection. In 1961, my family moved from Brownsville, Brooklyn, East New York, to a little town called Uniondale, Long Island. And we, you know, it was a one-bedroom apartment. My parents were getting tired of having my brother and I in the living room and they were in the bedroom. And it was very cramped and uncomfortable. So my grandparents bought us a house. We moved to Uniondale. And the second, maybe the first night my mother took care of me, I was in the bedroom downstairs. Anyway, I had to go to the bathroom. And I felt strange. I felt myself get up. I felt myself turn on the light, go into the bathroom, and suddenly I was soaked, spotty in the bed.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know what was going on. My mother was screaming at me, "You haven't wet the bed in, you know, since you were a little boy. What's the matter with you? Blah, 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 blah." And I thought about this, and I said, "What's going on here?" So the next night, I had to go to the bathroom. I got up. I literally got up and went. When I came back, I laid down, and I felt myself get up again and walk around the new house. I familiarized myself with the kitchen and the hallways and the dining room and this big living room. And I didn't go up the stairs yet. There was a vibration not to do that, so I didn't. And it's odd because we did have a poltergeist. His name was Frankie, and he lived up there. I didn't know that yet. But I was told by spirit, "Don't go in that area. You're only a little boy. You don't know where you're going yet. Wait." And so I didn't tell anybody I could do this. But every night thereafter, I would leave my body and explore the house. And I thought, wow. And I knew this was a different energy. And why I'm going to bring back to Hathor. When I started working with the Egyptian cards, which I was about, I would say 8 or 9. I won't bring up that particular queen that I always bring up. That energy vibration came, and Isis, Aset, and Hathor work together. They are two amazing goddesses that will be mother-daughter kind of energy. And there is a nasty side to Hathor, and that is Sekhmet. People who don't know about her, you know, they tell me, "Oh, she's this wonderful lioness goddess and this and beneficence." She's not beneficent. She's angry. She is the fiery eye of God. She is the anger, the rage, the indignation that comes through. So when Hathor, who sets aside in her beautiful self, wants to become vicious and righteous and attack negative things, and sometimes she goes overboard, she becomes Sekhmet, or Sekhet, if you wish. It's a very strong, powerful energy.
Is
she
that
goes
why
into a chamber.
The love goddesses are often associated with war as well? Because of that dual...
Isn't it interesting?
Nature? Yes, it is very interesting.
I mean, even Athena, she's, you know, knowledge and wonderful things, and then she's war, right? With it, like Ares, she's war.
Yes.
Well, Sekhmet is the warrior side of Hathor. And that energy comes through, and it's rage, and she's learned to channel it by taking off a lion-headed mask and putting it back into a naus, a little temple block, where she will be able to put that energy aside. And it's kind of symbolic. It's telling us to do the same thing, that when we get frustrated and angry and out of control, to step back and kind of put that energy aside. I do it through meditation. I know you do as well. And through my astral projection. If I can tap into that energy, I ask Hathor for help. I ask the Venusian energies to come down. I get a red-purple aura around me. And it makes me feel warm and comfortable and secure. And then I can release my astral self to where I'm going to go. I teach the people that I'm working with, all of the people I work with, that work with kinetic energy, which is my particular sect, and that, the people of Egypt, how to use astral projection in prayer and also to accomplish things that when you have your body on, you're not necessarily able to do. But it's a very interesting way to release the body. I know you've been doing it for years, Hercules.
Yes.
So how do you feel about that? Do you also feel that that energy comes from Venus?
I feel that the energy comes from different places depending on what you're using for. Like in this particular incarnation, there are different aspects.
Hello? Hello?
to a deity.
Hercules.
In Greek mythology and in Roman, it's the epithets that they put after their names that tell you which aspect of the god they are. So depending on what you're doing and what energies you're working with, those are the colors that come into play. Those are the energies that come into play. So in my current role, I'm working with the more Hermaean parts of the Hercules energy or the divinity of Hercules. And that is blue with like white lightnings in it and a slight pinkish red inside the energies as well. And
when I do my
astral projection, those are the colors that that most often play. Unless I'm doing something else entirely, and then different colors will come into play.
Well, I want to tell you something. People have often seen when I'm going to be where they need me to be. Teal, peacock blue, which is my eye color, spheres appear in their room. This has been going on for about 50 years now. When someone needs my energy, although I also use the cobalt as a healing thing, if I personally bring that energy to them, my energy is teal, peacock blue. And it's a crazy thing. Ever since I was a little boy, that color was like a power color. And I found out later in life, it was also my father's favorite color. And he never told anybody. When I was 30 years old before he said, you know, that's my favorite color too, Michael. He never said anything. He always said blue, but what he meant was teal, peacock blue. So I don't know if that's genetic from the Waterman side of the family or just something I learned. I don't think my father astral projected. If he did, it would have been to Yankee or Met Stadium or some sport. Or some sports complex. My father was very sport. We are very opposite. I know what baseball and football and all that is kind of about, but it's not my thing. I would rather be, you know, if I'm going to do sports things, I like archery. I like fencing, swimming, long distance running and walking. Those are my things. My father doesn't like that. Oh, and fishing. My father abhors. They never liked fishing. And it's odd because our last name is Waterman.
Yes.
We were fishermen.
I know, that's strange how it works. I did some ancestor work last year or the year before, and that profoundly affected me because I always thought that I had moved way past my familial conditioning. And then by doing the ancestor work, I discovered that my apple did not fall far from the tree at all. That was very humbling. But now that
me
I
too.
Accept
I
it, it's actually very empowering.
I was going to say, me too. I have to be near water. It's a funny thing. I mean, I'm Michael Waterman, but I need to be. I don't want to be inland. I mean, where I am right now, there's no ocean. I need that. I really do. And I felt better when I was in Manhattan, when I had the Atlantic Ocean on one side and the East River on the other. It made me feel good, you know, or the Hudson and the East River and the Atlantic. It was kind of necessary. And it still is. And I feel that's one of my elements. And that's another thing. Hathor also, people don't understand, although she's love and all those amazing things, she brings down, as he was saying earlier, a vibration of a liquid energy, water, very much so.
Yes.
And this is why it resonates with me, because I find Isis is more of an energy guy and non-elemental. She's, you know, she's like universal. Hathor brings into that energy water and moisture, like her great-grandmother, whose name is Mooch, you know, the energy of, I'll call it the river of life, not necessarily the Nile, although that's where it started. The river of life, the blood that's within inside of us, the life force, the liquid life force inside of us. So that's really, that's where things are going right now.
I'm sorry.
I beg your pardon?
All of a sudden, something.
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can now. I got interrupted for a second. That was strange.
Yes, things have been glitchy lately. So it sounded like somebody else was talking for a second. So somebody must have their electric current crossed ours in some way or online.
I see. You do know that we have a super moon, too.
No, I did not know that.
This is the second super moon. It's huge. And the energy is gigantic and bringing very strong things. We're getting closer. As we get to my new year, the witch's new year, Samhain, the moon will be enormous again. That is an interesting thing. We'll talk about that another time. But that is a time of renewal. This is a time, this comes for harvest and for also bringing about, how will I say, re-entering into life, not necessarily leaving life. Osiris passes on in autumn. There's an old novel called Osiris Died in Autumn, and it's about something entirely different, but it's, the saying is that he died and was reborn in the spring. So Hathor, as I said, brings the energy back, and also about the energy of growth and family, beginning to understand each other. Ignoring that energy causes chaos, and I think that's what was happening as we came into Aquarius, was this terrible chaos, which I think we're getting out of now. How do you feel about that? Do you think we are moving away from this chaotic mess?
I think that it depends on where we put our attention. And that's why I pulled back from a lot of the reporting. I know what's going on. I'm politically involved and I'm aware, and I do check to see what's going on in my world. But I find that the preoccupation with it feeds it and perpetuates it. So my attention is focused elsewhere on stability and on more positive things.
Well, we're kind of creating a new world in a certain way.
Yes,
we're opening up education. We're opening up people's spirituality in a different vein, perhaps, than they've used in their whole lives. Different consciousnesses. I know myself, people look at me and they say, Michael, you're involved with the ancient Egyptians, so you want to wrap everybody like a mummy? And I want to say to them, there's more to Egyptian magic and Egyptian religion than mummies. They were more concerned with life than they were with death. They understood that death was a next step, but an intermediate step. And I still believe that. Maybe it's the Egyptian in me. But I don't think of it as finality. I think of it as moving into a cocoon, as it were, until you're ready to be used again, which is my thought on reincarnation.
How would we bring more of Hathor's energy into our daily lives and into our world?
I would say if you use things like cornelian, which is for decision-making, if you use pink and red tones, rose quartz, which is the love stone, which is dedicated directly to Hathor, it resonates with the planet Venus, the vibration of Venus, and certainly the vibrations of the goddess Hathor. And so that would be one way. Carry with you a rose quartz. I want to tell you something. Diana Montfort, who's a dear friend of ours, I gave her, when I first saw her at Nick Kuro's, one of his meetings, a rose quartz. And she said, what is this? Told me her, it changed her whole life. People are nicer to her. She feels better about herself. Her whole self, her whole energy has changed because of rose quartz. So that is something vital to use. I mean, if you can afford it, carry rubies. But that's kind of, you know, out of my price range, I'm sorry to say. Yeah, I have a raw ruby chunk that I work with. But rose quartz is the best way. If you frankincense. Okay. I was going to say, if you use frankincense, if you carry incense with you, and just to kind of feel that warm pink-red vibration of positive love energy. And that will bring you, if you feel good about yourself, you're more apt to learn things, I find.
Yeah, very, very, very true. And on my altar, There's a rose quartz near the statue of Aphrodite.
That's a good thing. I'm going to say something kind of funny, which is not unusual for me. But like moisturizer in a jar, my former boss, who I call her my saint, yours are cleaner, she was complaining that her moisturizer wasn't doing anything. And Ms. Klinger said, are you using it? And the woman said, no. She said, well, what good is it going to be if it's sitting on a shelf? How does it work for you? It's the same thing with crystals and stones. They're all well and good if they're just sitting there. But in order for us to really work with them, you should be holding them or carrying them with you. The vibration needs to touch us. When I was having trouble at my last job, I carried with me many, many pieces of black tourmaline, which repels negativity. I carried with me a piece of rose quartz for better love energy, clear quartz for clarity, and also a piece of jade, which is for success and moving on. So those things helped me. Leaving that job, or I should say the job leaving me, was the best thing that ever happened to me. My whole life has changed. I am free to do what I need to do, to teach, to... you mentioned artwork. I have been making, as you know, crazy wands. Beautiful,
uh-huh.
Beautiful crystal wands.
People
are going crazy over them. I have yet to get you yours. Next Wednesday, I promise, I'm bringing them. But also, I'm working with my statues and my artwork. I've been sculpting and painting. I am working with Ushabti statues, which are spirit-traveling statues, spirit-traveling dolls, I'll call them in a way. They help you go into another state of consciousness. So does that help you answer your question too?
Yes, it does. And we'll have to outline it on a future episode and just focus on each of the things that you brought up. As you know, Michael and Diane Duncan, as part of their evolving spiritual journey, were focusing on the worldwide religion of love, in which people would basically have their own experiences unique to them about the divinity of love, and they would use this energy to help reshape the planet into a more loving existence. So I really enjoyed their vision and tried to support in any way I could. And of course, as you know, I observed the planets. So every Friday is attuned to Venus, and I post blessings from Venus every Friday.
Well, you know, if you look out in the sky now, because it's autumn, the sky is clearer. You can see Venus,
yes.
That big red flashing thing that's out there. It's not the North Star. That flashing one is Venus. And she's gorgeous, and she's saying, hello, here I am. Work with me, enjoy my energy, absorb my energy, absorb my knowledge, let me help you. And this I do, as I said, by working with Hathor. And she's, if you say Dua, which is all praises to Heheru, which is Hathor, and if you write that, her name in hieroglyph, which I can teach any one of you how to do, you write the hieroglyph in red, on a piece of paper. Back then it was papyrus, that's all they had. We can use paper, we can use parchment. I tend to use actual papyrus still, which I get actually at Michael's, they have it.
Oh, wow.
It's a papyrus. It's expensive, but it's cheaper than getting it from Egypt.
Yes,
I don't know why. The Egyptians send it to you, but it's a fortune. And I don't mean painted already. I read and write hieroglyph fluently, so I don't need them to send me printed hieroglyph. I can do that well myself, and probably in better accuracy than they do. I've noticed a lot of these statuary and things that you get from Egypt, they just kind of roll off the same thing. I was looking at something the other day, and it was it had some of the right hieroglyphs. Then it was saying something about a Chinese deli.
On that strange note, we need to move on because we have only a few minutes left, and I'd love for you to share your contact information.
I'm sorry.
No.
Okay.
I'd love for you to share your contact information so people can enter your world.
Yes, of course. You can always get me first and foremost at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can reach me. That's the easiest way. If you want to reach me on Facebook, you can get me on Michael K. Waterman on Facebook. You can do it on Phone a Wizard on Facebook. Or I also have Michael Waterman on Facebook. Also, you'll see me. Fortunately, my picture's on all of them. You can get me at my phone number, which is available from Phone a Wizard, 516-650-3691. Well, you can reach me through Hercules Invictus, of course, always. I'm also on Instagram. You'd have to contact me so I can explain where that is for you, okay?
Okay, incredibly awesome. And you're on later this week. On Tuesday, you are on Sword and Sandal Cinema, and you're going to talk about the movie She. And then we have Kamwa Speaks on Thursday. So this conversation will continue.
So mote it be. And I wish all of you great blessings, and focus on those things and get yourself a rose quartz. It's very important.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Setna. As always, a pleasure to speak with you and an experience. I wish you well in all your endeavors, and I look forward to speaking with you in a couple of days.
I'll see you Wednesday. Blessings, Hercules. Good night, everybody.
And thank you to our wonderful audience. Whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody, and thanks again.